I sat with that and worked with those promises for 6 months. Sat with it in meditation. Read the words and sat with it. Because what it tells me on page 63, it says, when we sincerely took this position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. I had a new employer. Being all powerful, he provided what I needed if I kept close and performed his work well. It tells me, established on such a footing, I became less and less interested in me and more about what I can contribute to life. Less and less about me, more and more about you. And if you shoot over to page 62, I'm consumed with me. Selfishness and self-centeredness are the root of my troubles. It's all about me. One page over, I'm out of the way. What can I contribute to you? What can I give back to this life? Great promise. And the third step prayer is the affirmation of this decision in three. Where we simply sit with someone, whether you hold hands or get on your knees, however you do it, the intent is what counts in a third step prayer. Even the wording could be different. If I never heard his third step prayer and I'm sincerely looking to turn my will and life over to God, you think he's going to sit back and say, you missed the word, so do it again. Right? The intent is what's pure, it's what counts, my intent pure. But we have a beautiful prayer and we get to look at it, memorize it, we sit and we say our third step prayer. And then we don't hang around. Let me get my life together. I'm working my third step. How do you, you know, without doing step four? Because it says next we launched out in the course of vigorous action. Right? Step four, personal house cleaning. And we go through people, institutions, principles, fear, sex. The principles for me became more and more current belief systems as I did this work, even belief systems I acquired in Alcoholics Anonymous. So we have this four-column inventory, resentments of all the people. And I had to pray before I wrote, because whenever I didn't pray, I didn't write, or I would justify. I would conveniently forget. The sponsor doesn't need to know about that. And I start to get sick. I could feel the thing in here, this unmanageability. And I sat with my sponsor, and I'll clean up the language, but he says that you made a third step decision to turn your will and life over to care of God, and he's going to show you what to write. The pen is simply a spiritual translator. God is giving us the information. I need to ask him to be searching, fearless, and moral. Why? To stay away from a drink and be of service to you, and if I go help drunks, great. Primary purpose. And so I began to pray before I write and give thanks when I was done. So I don't walk around with some of the sordid spots I'm going to be visiting in step four around in the rest of my day. And I wrote down all the people, went back through my life. I didn't care if there was a resentment at the first inventory connect with them, I just put people down. That evolved over time. And then I did my second column, why I was angry with the person in column one. I didn't write a life story, you know. I don't like Joe. He's a really good guy when I first met him, but lately he's been really kind of funny. I always say hello to him, and we go on, you know, this thing. And suddenly, I'm really right, and Joe's really wrong. Anger will insist that I be right. It'll insist that I be right. And when we're in a resentment, you know, when we have that retaliation going on in the mind, I mean, if you're like me, we're beautiful. We're like Clint Eastwood in Dirty Harry. I mean, we come back with the right, you know, comebacks. We know how to maneuver. If you want to be tough, we lay the guy out on the floor, one punch. I mean, we're just great, right? On the inside. On the outside, we say, sure, anything you want. We walk away. When we get home, I look at third column, right? Pride. Personal relationships, self-esteem, security, pocket, ambition, sex, relations. Parts of these areas of my life that are being affected. And our book says we considered it carefully. Why? Because we get to see fear a lot in the third column. Pride. No one should see me this way. No one should know this about me. Why? Because they may not like me. What does that mean? They may stay away from me. What does that mean? I may be abandoned, feel abandonment, which means I'll be alone. I'm going to die. Security, what I need to be okay. They're not giving me what I need, which means they don't respect me, which means they don't care for me, which means they're totally discounting me, which means I'm going to be alone, which means I'm going to be abandoned, which means I'm going to die. Fear in the third column. We'll get to see it. It's a precursor, sets us up for fear inventory in some cases. And I get to write the fourth column. Rubber hits the road. It's all about me here, all the manifestations of self. And then I go sit with someone in fire, and I need to speed this up because we close. And
so, 1 hour and then open it up.
Okay, so we're almost on the hour, that's why.
Okay. Right through 7, much time. We have 2 hours.
You hit them next week, don't worry.
It'll be good.
Thank you. Fourth column talks about my part, where I was at fault. And it's the first time for me that I could not blame you, even though you may have done some unkind things to me, even though you have gone out of your way to hurt me. And for some of us, like me, maybe when we were little children, we were bothered by adults in a way that was completely inappropriate. With me? How do I write down a fourth column? You ripped me, or you robbed money from me. An adult who did something that was improper with me. Right? You went out of your way to harm me in another way. How am I at fault in the fourth column? I have to disregard what you did, regardless of what it is, entirely. It's one of the many any lengths our book talks about. And rubber certainly hits the road. And I've experienced all of those sort of resentments. And every one of those areas showed up in my fourth column. And I remember calling my sponsor saying, hey, I was 8 years old. 9 years old and 10 years old. I was a little guy. And I was scared to death. And it made me feel dirty for the rest of my life on the inside. I felt less than a man. I felt inadequate because of what they did with me. And my book is telling me to put down where I'm at fault. And my sponsor, bless him, he said, Peter, how long have you been hating this man? And I'll call my old sponsor, I'll call him Bill. I said, Bill, my whole life. In fact, and I kind of got a little animated. I says, I'm strong enough now and big enough now that if I had him in a corner, I'd look to do some damage. That, he said, has to go. The hate in your heart has to go. Don't need to love this man. Certainly don't need to have a relationship with him. Just stop the hate. It's what's blocking you from getting to the next place. Now, rubber hit the road, and it was a lot of work behind that. A lot of prayer. And a lot of seeking some outside help. I got so free of that, I've been in that guy's company a couple of times. And I didn't pick up a chair and break it over his back. You know, like my Clint Eastwood thing had going on. Little John Wayneism going on. No, get in there. None of it. I got free of that to talk about it to you, and I pray I'm not being distasteful in sharing that with you. Okay. And I share that because over the years, women have come to me and shared that type of pain, but the guys never. Can't. I'm a guy. And I ante that up, and little by slowly over the years, men have come to me and says, I never even told my sponsor that. Can I talk to you about that? We need to talk about that. Or the people who physically hurt me for no reason. I'm at fault where? Hating them, vengeful, spiteful, character assassinating. I had to get past that stuff. It was one of my many any lengths, and trust me, it was one of my many any lengths. But little by slowly, I start to get free of that because we're talking about God taking one of his children from point A to point B. What I have to remember here, what I ask you to consider when you're writing inventory is no matter what goes on paper, no matter what sort of spot we get to visit or what shows up, right? What sort of resentment, whatever it may be, it's coming from a loving God. The work we get to put on step four is coming from God. God is saying, here, this is what's in the way of getting free. I'm not doing this on my own. The Spirit's moving me. The pen is the translator, and it comes out. And if you've done inventory, you know when you're writing, all of a sudden things start showing up that you just, where's this coming from? Right? It's God. So our inventory, when we follow directions, and please, the St. Lip Service, I offer this to especially someone who's never done inventory. If we follow directions, we have a sponsor, and we pray, the fourth step is, in a sense, perfect. You know, we hear this word, I got to write the perfect fourth step. You can't write a perfect fourth step. We can if we turn to God. In spirit, in essence, the fourth step is perfect because we're following directions and God is giving us the information. So therefore, it is perfect because God is not imperfect. So those things that I care to forget about when I'm writing, oh my God, I can't believe I'm reliving this. Go through it. God will move you through it. It's what's in the way. The obstacles in my path, the obstacles in your path, whatever they may be. Park Avenue, park bench, I don't care. Don't compare. What's ever in the way, God's giving it to us. We suit up and show up. I'll do anything, sponsor any lens. Turn my will and life over to care of God. And God says, okay, your life is truly mine, and I'm going to show you how to experience all of me. Isn't my God doesn't hold back and say, I'm going to give you a whole lot of work and watch you do before you can experience my love. We're the people who were blocked. We created this. I created my own calamity. I created my own dramas, my own contempt. And God's saying, here, here's a sledgehammer, get it out of the way. And he allows us to do that. And we really, you know, may you find him now. We don't have to look too far because the great reality is deep down within, right here. Thumbprint of God on all of us, the spirit of God in every one of us. Back to resentments. The great reality is deep down within. God's in you, God's in you, God's in you, God's in you. I'm angry with you, I'm blocked. 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 Times that by 200 or 300 people. So my first inventory looked like. I made 200 direct approaches, and that's just where my story took me. I had 5 books of like spiral notebooks. My sponsor almost bailed on me when I showed up. Resentment after resentment after resentment and fears. Fears. Unbelievable fears. And God says we can get free. And then it tells me in step 4 that we're prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. And it holds the key to my future. Prepare to look at it, my life, this work, from an entirely different angle for the first time ever. There's a shift in consciousness. Because they have some fourth-step promises. There's a shift that happens within while we're doing the writing. And some of us are not even aware of it, but it starts to happen. But we get to see ourselves on paper. Excuse me. Thank you. It's kind of like walking down a Manhattan street, trying to go from Madison Square Garden up to Times Square on a day like today. You're trying to, you know, weave in and out. But if we go up to a building, up to the 10th floor, we look at it from an entirely different angle. We see a path. The newscopters are up there for a reason. They can see clearer. It's a different angle than the guy driving in the car. God allows us to have a shift to look at our life from a different angle and get to see our part. Get to see how we started the ball rolling. Get to see how unforgiving we have become. Get to see how we're so attached to a resentment or a fear or a part of our life for drama that it becomes our life. We get attached to drama. This false sense of self. This is my life. This is my drama. I'll create more drama. I'll look for drama. So I go into a meeting and say, there's Joe with the drama. Because without the drama, I feel like I cease to be. And I get to see all of that. You'll see it even in our meetings, the person who's always in drama and looking for new drama. Because they think that's who they are. They think that's who they be in here. It's delusional, but I was like that too. Step 4 allows me to see that, the false sense of self, the me that's run by a thinking mind, and all the drama that creates, my attachments to my external condition, thinking that was a remedy for what ails me on the inside, called alcoholism. Got to see all of that. Wrote out a fear inventory. It would be fears like I had up until I was about 15, fear of firemen. And there were simple fears like that. The firemen used to roll down the block or go put out a fire, and I couldn't understand why I was 15. maybe even 16, and had this feeling in me that was like I was scared. Couldn't identify it. What was going on with that? Wrote out some inventory. When I was a little boy, I remember living in Red Hook, Brooklyn. I remember my mom would give me the little bottle, and I'd lay in bed, and the fire trucks would roll down Van Brunt Street, Red Hook, Brooklyn, almost every night. And there was a famous post that I was out of this fireman, this rough-looking fireman, having this little baby. He was taking him out of a burning building down a ladder. My head told me, the firemen are going to take me away from mom and dad. He got internalized. 16, I'm still afraid of firemen. I'm writing out inventory, fears come up. Where's this coming from? I got to see that from a totally different angle. Simple fears like that. I got to see other fears. I got to see how much my fear was attached to because I was in self-reliance. I got to see fears of dying, fears of no money, fear of poor health, fear of money, fear of good health, fear of never dying. My sponsor had me do the opposites. Great assignment. Fear of being old and poor. Okay. Most of us would raise our hand. Okay, write this inventory. Fear of being rich and growing very old. Fear of being rich and never dying. Let's play that. Let's play with that. What's that look like? Why would there be fear? This fear, because self is in the way. Who wants my money? How do I protect my money? I'll be around forever. What does that mean? All the people I know are going to be passed on. I'll be alone, abandoned. I'm going to die anyway. Got to do the opposites with fear. We got to institutions. The first time I went through to work, the medical community and the religious community were on top of the list because both didn't save my mom who died from this. My resentment inventory, by the way, had I was told to write down me and God. I found a whole lot of things to be angry with me about, but I didn't think I could really be angry with God and or tell anyone about it, but I put down God because he didn't save mom either. And I blame God for everything. And as one of my teachers says, I've been going through life treating God like a person and people like God. Had it backwards. You know what I mean by that? I go to Joe and say, Joe, I need this done, okay? And I expect Joe to follow through and dot every I and cross every T and do it perfect. He's human. He makes a mistake and I'm writing pages of inventory on him. I'm not going to turn to God. It's not going to work anyway. Got it backwards. I treat God like a person, like fallible, and the person like God, infallible. I got to see the difference between friends and acquaintances. If we had coffee together, you were my lifelong buddy. Right? And I wondered why you weren't around all the time. That was a hard one for me to swallow, the difference between friends and acquaintances. And principles were a lot of belief systems I grew up with. And I sat with my first sponsor, and we went through this work, and my first sponsor embraced everything I said. He didn't judge me once. He looked bored a few times also. And he gave me some insight. And remember when I called up my sponsor about this incident that happened to me as a young boy, and I said, they want me to write down where I was at fault. You know what he told me when we sat with my fifth step? That the same thing happened to him. And I felt no longer alone. Another man experienced this and had the same repercussions from it. My lungs were filling up with air again. It was called God. Since then, going through the work, I've been able to work with what I call multiple fifth steps. Our book talks about personal persons. And I sit with other people besides my sponsor. And trust me, where our book says we may have had spiritual beliefs, we now begin to have a spiritual experience that has happened to me every time. Not necessarily when I got done with five, but be somewhere between five and nine. Step five, with my current sponsor, sitting with more than one person, personal persons. The first time I went through the work, it was just a sponsor and moved on to six and seven. And since then, I found out, and I can talk to you about this from experience, that the more people who are on this path that I get to share with, the freer I get. Who understand what I'm about to do, understand it's a life and death errand, will embrace what I have to share, and give me guidance and feedback, and make things that much clearer, and kill ego, kill self some more. Pages 23 to 43 make me a seeker of God, and they still do. And if this is one of the any lengths I need to go to in sitting with more than one person, then so be it. And I got to see in sitting down every time with my fifth step, and even more have a profound impact on me in the latter times I've gone through the work, is how I was playing God. When I was writing out my fourth step and going over my life, I saw how I was playing God, how I had my plans and designs for everyone else, how I assigned roles for you, for me, and for God. No wonder why I was in so much fear. I got to see all of that on paper. I got to see everything I don't want to be. Do I want to still walk with this into the rest of this journey? No. It made my six-step consideration that much easier to make, to say yes to. All my belief systems about God, I got to see knowing God by not knowing. I got to unravel a lot of my belief systems about God. God is this, God is that. My idea of God, my concepts of God were just that. Concepts, very little experience with God, if any at all. And my concepts about God came from a thinking mind. A limited thinking mind. I can be the most worldly man in the world, on the planet. The most read university scholar. And yet my mind, whatever comes up with about God, amounts to a grain of sand on a beach. Because we're talking about infinite power. And all my plans and designs, all my decisions, everything having to do with God were based on what I can see. Like if I step outside of this meeting hall and I look down the block, I'll probably be able to see for about a few blocks. And that's it. Look behind me, the same thing. To my left and right, the same thing. Can't see any further. And I've gone through my life based on that limited sight distance. And I've interpreted everyone based on limited sight distance. Limited whatever I had in me. Limited. Limited insight. Limited intuitiveness. And I did the same exact thing with God. And my book dissolves all of that. Because God is everything. And if God is everything, then maybe God is nothing also. Before there was everything, there was nothing, but there was this power. And it was there before my heart took its first beat, and it'll be there long after my heart takes its last beat. It's present. Power. All love, no opposite. And I had to see that, and I got to see that, and how I got to see that was by sitting with someone in five and sharing what I had just wrote. What I had written. And then great things started to happen because I would get some feedback and some guidance and be steered a little bit clearer in a better direction. And then I would ask questions. We ask questions. And if my sponsor didn't have the answer, he would send me to someone who was better equipped to answer. There's great learning and great experience in asking questions. Because if we don't ask questions even about God, then we become fanatics. And we see what's happening on the planet because of things like that, right? We ask questions. Ask questions. Sit with the sponsor. What does this mean? Great students ask questions. Great teachers are students also and seek counsel. How neat would it be if you could imagine this about asking questions? If whatever your God looked like, if there is a look, whatever your power is that you pray to, showed up and sat down next to you, would you hesitate to ask it, her, him questions? You may confess how much you love them, how grateful you are. And then you would be a student and say, what does this mean? How come this? We would ask, it would just come out of us, the questions we would have to ask. Here we are. The greatest spiritual teachers I've found in my life have been members of Alcoholics Anonymous, recovered members. Why do I hesitate to ask questions? Ask questions. We have some fifth step promises our book talks about. And I didn't experience those fifth step promises the first time, right after I got done with the fifth step. I was more relieved that it was done. I did feel something, that another person knew all about me. And there was some, the mind had some disturbance, but here it felt very light, very open, very, very roomy, very free. I didn't have to worry about what if they find out, how much I'm angry with that or fearful about that or something I did, you know, read sex inventory to another guy, you know, about those things that we rather just not let anyone know about, certain behaviors, right? Someone knew me. And those fifth step promises, I remember starting to experience something. I didn't wake up until I was in 6, 7, 8, 9. And I remember being at a meeting in Brooklyn, and I was in, got my instructions 6 and 7. I was creating this list for 8, and something was going on that I could not describe. And when I can't describe something, I feel so blissful and so joyful, it's God. I remember sitting with another member that my sponsor sponsored also at the time, and I'm sharing with this person what's going on with me. And they were just delighted for me because they knew what was going on. Since then, I've sat with a prospect, and then the sponsor, another AA member, and then the sponsor, and shared my fifth step. It has evolved this way. I don't have that many names on like I did the first time. Although one time I went to sit down and figure this is going to be a snap inventory. There'll be about 10 names, and 70 names showed up. My current inventories are just that, current inventories. When I revisit the work. However, sometimes old resentments still show up. Things from the past still show up. And I put them down anyway. But my focus is on current stuff. And how I knew I was starting to have a shift, an internal shift within me, was this way. I go through the work, it was the third time maybe, and a friend of mine from California called me up and he said, "Hey, how's that inventory going?" And he had this snicker about him, this way of laughing, very cynical. And he laughed and says, "How's that sex inventory going?" Right? And at that moment, I knew something changed. Because the first time I wrote inventory, my sex inventory looked like a newcomer's sex inventory. Everything you would expect was in there, right? But this time, a few years removed from the first time, it had little to do or nothing to do with sex. It had to do with my ideas of how men ought to be and how women ought to be, belief systems about our journey. Thinking we were, well, there's an obvious difference, but thinking we were different in spirit. And I'm John Wayne. And you're the fair maiden, you know. Waiting for me to come home. And real men do this. You know, I grew up in a family full of longshoremen from downtown Brooklyn. And real men throw punches first and worry about it later. Anything less than that, you're less than. Now, we've changed, thank God. My dad, being watching me do this and my brothers seek that path, he's kind of like softened up a bit. But growing up, it was you throw punches first, worry about it later. Anything less than that, I was less than. And women are supposed to be this way. And I was having trouble with personal relationships. I wonder why. Right? And I got to see that stuff, and I realized how much God allowed me to get moved past the stuff that plagued me on the way in. The great change that happened for me. My whole life was full of infidelity with girlfriends and things like that. And meeting the same type of woman. Wondering why they hate me and I hate them. But then something happened where I've been in a very long-term relationship when I was married. And even after that dissolved and I'm in a new relationship where I'm honest, which is very unlike how I used to be. And I'm just so grateful for that. Because what I found out also by going through this work is my harsh treatment towards women. And God has allowed me to treat women like children of God, not like as women, and I'm the man. To seek counsel with women. And I have to get a woman's perspective to see what how they approach this. There's a few women in Jersey who are just great teachers to me. And I woke up to that because I had to share something in my first fifth step, and that I really dislike men who do this. But there was an incident. I came out of a blackout in downtown Brooklyn on the F train, Smith and 9th Street. If any of you guys know that, it's a big train station, beating up a girlfriend, ripping her purse out of her and hitting her because I wanted money that she had and wouldn't give to me. Came out of a blackout in that condition. I don't know what happened to her. I don't know where I was before that, but I came out of this blackout in that condition, and she was in tears, crying, and people, you know, just keep walking by because they don't want to get involved. I hated me for doing something, turning into an animal that I turned into. And alcoholism had a big grin on its face because it had two, not one now, in its grip. And that was painful for me to read in my fifth step. What my Heavenly Father has allowed me to do is, I don't do that. I've never done that since. And I treat women with respect. I don't 13-step women. I see vulnerability when they walk in here and I direct them towards women. It's the least I can do. And try to be a teacher or a friend or a big brother to some. But not manipulate and deceive. Because my spiritual life depends on that. It's how God allows me to do it. And I'm not making a sacrifice when I do that. With me? It's who I be. And I share that not to think highly of me, but the greatness of God. Step 6, after finishing step 5, it says, if we can answer to our own satisfaction, looking at, are the stones properly in place? They ask us some questions on the bottom of page, I think it's 75. Have we tried to really sneak something through the archway? Have we tried to get something past God that we think he's not going to find out? Have we omitted anything for building an archway through which we shall walk a free man at last? I thought I was free in the past. Now it's telling me at last you're really going to be free. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have I skipped on the cement put into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? And it says if I can answer these questions to my own satisfaction, I look at step 6. We're building this archway. I was a longshoreman, a union guy for 23 years. And I know how union guys perform. Shortcut, let's get out of here. Coffee break. That's a generalization, not all union guys. I did. Right? I'm not getting paid, the hell with the archway. Right? I don't want that archway. So God's showing me what to do, and really, God is the one who's building it. Using me, building it. Using a sponsor, building it. God's doing it. It'll stand forever. I'm going to pass through this archway free. I look at these questions, and if you break it down, they're asking, have we tried to sneak something by? Have we kept something that no one's going to find out about? That sex inventory, that fear inventory, that thing that I thought was insignificant, I feel like an idiot for sharing this. Have we emptied up? And if we have, then there's a shift. That's a great promise. Book says, doesn't to your sponsor satisfaction, not to the group satisfaction, if we can answer to our own satisfaction, we've had a shift go on here. Power, the lack of power we had, now we're getting some power, and we're using that power. Okay, can I answer these questions to my own satisfaction? Truthfully, yes. Look at step 6. Am I ready to have God take every one of these things? And I consider, am I ready to have God take them all? He better. Because if I don't turn to God and have him work in those defects and deal with them, they will deal with me. And very often what happens is what gets in the way is the way. This work, we look at it like, what an order, I can't go through with it. The same thing with God. How do I get to God? Oh my God, that's too much for me. What gets in the way is the way. But when we start to unlearn, we get free. When we start to subtract and reduce things, take things away, we start to get free. And we get to see that we are beyond form, beyond name. That we're really, truly, and this has been a new thing for me. I've heard a million times, but a new meaning for me, new depth, that we're truly spiritual beings having this human experience. Beyond name, beyond form, beyond content. Same thing with God. Just is. Spiritual being moving from moment to moment to moment to moment. Free or in the grip of alcoholism? We look at step 7. The prayer has very little to do with me. The prayer has a whole lot about me being of service to God and others. And I ask God for strength to go out from here, right here, to do His bidding. Steps 8 and 9, into the world with the Spirit. Go work with others. The second time I went through the work, it became my first step for life. Because what I was looking at was the manifestations itself, the defects of character that was still there, that had to go, and if they didn't, they were going to kill me. It was my first step for life. And I suit up with a spirit of willingness to have God remove these things. One of the assignments I worked with the first time was I listed the defects that were revealed to me and listed the opposites of those defects on another sheet of paper. Dishonest, honest. Self-serving, giving. Hateful, loving. And I turned back to God for this stuff. I go through the work the second time with the 7th step, and I do the 7th step prayer, and I remember feeling completely empty on the inside, like I'd never been to an AA meeting in my life. Like I never opened up the big book. I was vibrating on the inside. I was scared to death. There was no thinking about a drink, which is key to this experience, because I found out later on it was truly a God experience. And I was feeling so shaky, like I was dying. I prayed again and went to a meditation after the 7-step prayer. And I sat in meditation, and the words that came to me was, "Father, save me from me," which is what I talked about a little bit earlier. "Father, save me from me, because I will do me in faster than anyone." And then I called up my sponsor. He says, "Mark, here's what's going on." And he says, "Sounds like you're having an experience to me." Thanks a lot. There was something that took place this particular day. It was a Sunday. And every fiber of my being wanted to put my hand on the wall and go with old way of doing things, old belief systems. I'm going to get in there. I'm going to go fix it. Get in there, go fix it. Got to get in there, go fix it, because it's going to turn out this way. And I couldn't. I couldn't. And I wanted to all day. I was on this obsession. I got to do something. I should make this call. I should go do this. I should make this call. I got to do something. And I couldn't. Well, the end of the day happened, and I promise you, it worked out perfect, divinely perfect. And then I was so grateful that I didn't create another new drama by doing what I wanted to do. Common sense truly became uncommon sense. One of my teachers says, my answers for today are tomorrow's problems. Right? Shift. What I found out, that experience I was having the second time through the work, I was truly experiencing the emptying out, the death of self. And it feels like we're dying sometimes when we go through the work, because we're dying the death of self before the physical death. And that's what was happening to me. I got to challenge everything, and it was incredibly uncomfortable in here. But then I got free. And that emptiness started to get still. And the mind started to get still. And then I got present and mindful and back to breath. My 8-step list, which came out of step 4. And I start making amends. And I've gone through this work many, many, many times. It feels so wonderful on the other side. Not always when we're going through it. So why deny my spirit in me and others? I get a chance to help the greatness of God and the greatness of this power. All the work we do in here, our point is to the glory of God. We ought to be an AA, a pep rally for the power of God. We should be shouting for the rooftops about what God can do for us. A pep rally for the power of God. And too many times in contemporary AA meetings, don't talk about God because you're scared a newcomer out. Tough. If they're lucky, booze may kick him back in. If it doesn't kill him, it's like getting wheeled into an emergency room with a life-threatening wound, and the doctor says, "Easy does it." Like, what are we demanding? We're demanding help now. Stop the bleeding. I don't want to die. Help me. Well, what happens when the drunk walks in with one day? state of obsession dying, and they show up to us. You know, the last place they're going to walk into, but here they are. And we tell them easy does it, but we don't give them a solution. Or the gentleman or the woman who walks in here with 25 years or 20 years or 15 years or 10 years and is dying to think about drinking and suicide and just too afraid to tell anyone because we may think less of them in their thinking mind, and they're thinking about blowing their brains out. They don't know what to do, and we say, well, they got 10 or 15 years. They got it together. Really, how do we know? Or when we tell the newcomer, instead of, I'll sit down and work with you, once they ask us to sponsor them, or we offer this book to them before they ask us to sponsor them and say, we have a solution for you, you never have to drink again. We tell them, make 90 meetings that we hear, but some meetings, make 90 meetings in 90 days, right? And my book tells me we have to quit playing God because it doesn't work. Aren't I playing God when I tell a newcomer who's in a state of obsession, who keeps relapsing, who can't stop drinking, make 90 meetings in 90 days, like I know they're going to make 90 meetings in 90 days without picking up a drink. If they had the power to do that, what the hell are they doing here? But I play God by saying, Joe, you can't stop drinking, so make 90 meetings in 90 days, make more coffee. He or she is trying to hold on to another hour. Their life is in the toilet. They're dying. Maybe they just got out of another treatment center, and we tell them, just put the plug in the jug. That may work for some. And if it works for you and you're here tonight, bless you. I'm not trying to tell you you're wrong. What I am going to do is challenge it for a real alcoholic. Because I got that information and almost died. And the people who showed this book to me annoyed me. They disturbed me on the question of alcoholism. And I'll close with the story on how it happened. God separates me June 23rd, 1988, December 22nd, 1988. I want to drink more than anything in the world. Everything's caving in on me. I'm acting like a drunk without a drink in me. And if she only loved me again, if only this happened, when that works out, I'm living in Minnesota. There's 30 feet of snow out. I can't take it. I'm driving down, I don't know, wherever it was, somewhere in Minneapolis or Bloomington, and I said to myself, the first bar I go to or the first crew on the corner who's dealing something, I'm getting fired up because this is awful. And then something came over me in here. I says, God, I'm in trouble. Just help me. I don't know what to do here. I thought of this gentleman in Minnesota. Called him up. He was my first sponsor. Kind of like a first sponsor. Went to his house. I shared my dramas of life with him. He says, Peter, where are you with God in the 12 steps? And I said, Joe, when do you start the steps? And he says, when you stop throwing up, you're late. He disturbed me on a question of alcoholism. But he offered me truth. So I won't lie to a drunk, and I hope you don't lie to me. And I'm very grateful to give this message away with the same love and gratitude that it's given to me each and every day, for fun and for free. That's all I got. Thanks.